Joe Benigno and Evan Roberts on The Fan.
Joe and Evan, Evan and Joe, on WFAN Sports Radio. If you want to be in the New York, no, gotta go to Joe and Evan, Evan and Joe. 66 on your AM dial, 101.9 FM, Joe and FAN.
2 o'clock on The Fan. Benigno and Roberts here in the afternoon on a Tuesday in New York City, broadcasting live from the Town Fair Tire Studio, powered by Town Fair Tire. Nobody, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Joe is on vacation. He is playing golf. I spoke to him today. He will be hitting the golf balls. I think he already is hitting the golf balls, but he is on vacation and will return next week. Last night, I did it again. I think we're all doing it. I think most of us as Americans are turning on our televisions and we're watching everything around us. And I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit less, where I just could not watch cable news anymore. Any of it. It felt like one giant cesspool. And so over the last few years, I've gotten my information through, you know, reading newspapers online, following the right people or what I think is the right people on Twitter, and avoiding everything on cable TV. But I think, like everybody else, you know what's going on around you, and you watch it. And I don't know if you felt this way, but there are moments when I watch a lot of what's going on around us where I feel pride, where I see protesters in the street protesting for as righteous a cause as humanly possible. And that's not just the fact that a man was murdered in cold blood a week ago because of the color of his skin, but the fact that we can't have it ever happen again. And we can't live in a country where that ever happens. But you've got people protesting in the streets peacefully. And the images that jump out at me, the images that, you know, almost cause a tear to come down my eye, my wife too, is when you see police officers and protesters side by side, listening to each other, which I think is the key in America, listening to each other. And sometimes they don't do a good job of it. All of us are guilty of that. And those images are amazing. And those images are the things that I see, most of us see, and we say, you know what, we're in a terrible time in our country, but boy, this is a positive step. But then you see other images, the images of looting, the images of tear gas being spread. And look, I said this yesterday and I really believe it. And I don't know if it's wanting to believe something, but I really believe that 98% of the people on the streets right now are doing it for a just and righteous cause, which is that nobody should lose their life because of the color of their skin. No one should walk down the street feeling that way because of the color of their skin. That police officers are protecting us. I can only imagine being a family member of a police officer that goes to work every day, and you don't know if they're going to come back alive. They're putting their life on the line for us every day. And I do believe that even though we see these images on TV that are negative or on Twitter that are negative, I think 98% of the people out there are righteous. And that goes for the protesters. That goes for the police officers. But we as a country have got to get to a better place. And sometimes when you watch, you feel like you're moving there, that the conversation is happening. But then 5 minutes later, you see other images and you say, where the hell am I? Is this even America? But those images, man, I'll tell you, of protesters and police, and I've seen it in a lot of cities across this country, marching together is beautiful. The problem is the looting perverts it. The tear gas perverts it. The good and the bad are both there. We're seeing a lot of both. I think it's mostly good. I think most people think that. But I asked this to a rioter. Why do you feel the need to knock down a glass window and go into a store and take something? Like, what is going through your mind? But the thing that is so important in this time is to not look at the bad and think that represents most. Because I don't think that's the case. I don't think it's at all. But as a country, we got to find a way to get to the end game. And the end game is how we never, ever, ever allow what happened to George Floyd and others to ever happen again. But as somebody that loves reading about history, and sometimes I get lost in reading about history, it's so easy when you read it to get upset or to be prideful, but then shut the book and say, yeah, that was 100 years ago, or that was 50 years ago. We are living in a history in which you can't just shut the book. You know, we've got to continue to move on and get to a better place. And I hope that we are. I hope that we can. The question is, how can we do it? And that's the question I think all of us are facing. And we're doing this simultaneously while we're still battling a virus. I mean, there's a reason why most of us are still home. There's a reason why businesses have been shut down. There's a reason why even I'm sitting here doing a radio show at home as opposed to in New York City, because we're still battling this virus. So we are dealing with things that are just, these are the things we'd read about in a book. And then we'd say, boy, that's nuts. And then we'd close the book and go watch a sporting event. And now this is our real world. It's a crazy, crazy place we're living in. But I think what we all need to do is just find a way to get better and to get to the place that I think all of us mostly agree we need to be. And that's at a place where everybody feels safe and everybody feels equal. And hopefully we're going to get to that place. But last night, man, I'll tell you, just as an American, as everybody else listening, I turned it on. Just couldn't look away. And the emotions from positivity to negativity over the course of like a minute would just rush through my body. So look, I'm just telling you what's on my mind as we begin this Tuesday. This is just kind of the thoughts that have been, you know, pounding in my head last night and this morning, because it's tough to ignore what's going on around you. And hopefully we can get to a place where there is systematic change, and our brothers and sisters, whether you're white, whether you're black, whether you're anybody, that you feel safe and you don't feel threatened walking down the street. And I hope we get to that place soon. I look at my son, who's only 3, and I think it's a lesson for all of us that kids learn things. So we have to teach them the right things. You know, you don't just plop into this world and have these preconceived thoughts about the way it works. You're taught these things. So what we have to do as a society is just teach our next generation to be better than what we were. Because I think that's what our parents tried to do for us and our grandparents tried to do for us. As we move through time, we just try to get better and better and better. Now, around here, we do a lot of sports, and we'll get to that today. The former head coach of the Jets, Herm Edwards, will join me coming up at 2:40. We'll get into the worst Met losses of the last 25 years. Yesterday was more positive with the best Met wins of the last 25 years. Today we get negative. And tomorrow we get positive again with the best Yankee wins of the last 25 years. And John Jastrzemski will be kind enough to join me tomorrow and Thursday as we go through all of that. The baseball situation is very interesting, because when the story broke yesterday late in our show about the idea that the owners may offer a 50-game season, the thought was from Jeff Passan, and certainly our thought for the last, you know, half hour or 40 minutes I was on when that came out, was this is their counter. This is the way the owners are going to counter the players. They're going to say, fine, you want 115 games of full pay? We can't do that. We'll give you 50 games of full pay. And now it appears, and this is very interesting, and I think this has added a kind of a different wrinkle to all of this, that's not a counter proposal. That's not the owner saying, look, this is what we're offering instead. That this is actually, hey, if we can't agree on anything, we think you've agreed to any kind of prorated amount. So if we can't come to terms on numbers for an 82-game season, if we can't get to that place, then we'll just impose 50 games because that's what we feel we could afford to pay. And that is very different. Very different than the idea that this is the counteroffer. You know, the counteroffer means this is what we're responding with. Hey, what do you think? It doesn't sound like that's the case. It sounds like this is our backup, that we're not going to blow up a season entirely. Worst case scenario, boom, 50 games. And that is very, very different, and it creates a lot of intriguing questions. Number one is this. If these two sides can't make a deal, they can't make a deal that both Tony Clark and Rob Manfred sign off on, and the commissioner says, okay, we can't make a deal. We're going to do this. What do the players say? Do the players say, oh, you're right, it's 50 games. Sure, we're only going to get 30% of, you know, the money that we are prorated to get, which is less than 51% when you go from 51% to 30%. But fine, we'll have a season. Okay, now we're not working. We're not playing as many games, but that's fine. We'll do it. Or the player is going to say, well, no, no, no. This is not good faith. And that's the phrase that can change everything. Because when the players and owners made their quote-unquote deal in the middle of March, the words that were used was good faith negotiations. Now, they did agree, prorated amount of money, and now you've got the dispute. Well, did that include having games in stadiums where nobody's there? But on the player's side, does that include the owner saying, we want to play the most possible games, but we're going to go with 50, not because of health reasons, but because of financial reasons. So the players could easily bring that up and say, whoa, 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 hold on. You can play and pay more than 50 or 60 games. You're choosing not to because of the money. That's not good faith. No deal. And maybe that's the way the owners then can say, hey, we got a way to play. The players are walking out. So is this being used as a way to blame the other side? Or would the owners and players say, okay, this is our backup plan because we both realize we just can't cancel a season? Because if we do that, we're asking for major, major trouble over the next few years. So hey, worst case scenario, here's a 50-game season. We get to play. We get paid. It's only 30%, but hey, we get paid. The owners don't pay as much money, and the fans get something, even if it's not exactly what they want. That's the interesting thing about this. This is not a counteroffer, at least this morning, this afternoon. It doesn't feel like a counteroffer. It feels like a break glass in case of emergency. But if you break the glass in case of emergency, the players say what? The players say, cool, let's go? Or the players say, that's not good faith. There's no deal. And then the season gets blown up and the commissioner gets to blame the players and say they decided not to play. See, what both sides have to understand is that blame game thing, that's not going to work. It really isn't. Look, I may have an opinion if this thing blows up where I say, hey, I blame more of the owners. And we may get callers who call up and say, I disagree. I blame more of the players. But at the end of the day, what everybody's going to agree on is that we're ticked off at both sides, and the damage the game is going to feel down the road is going to be tenfold. So it's not going to matter who I'm blaming or who you're blaming. It's not going to matter. And they have to realize that. They have to realize that. They have to kind of figure out that winning the blame game does nothing positive. It does nothing. Winning the blame game does what? Because in 2021 and in 2022, no one's going to care who is to blame. Look, I think in 1994, and I'm trying to remember how the majority of people thought, but I remember when baseball came back in late April of 1995, after it was finally brought back, all the things that fans did at games. I remember the first game at Chase Stadium, somebody jumped onto the field, a few guys jumped on the field, and they started throwing money around, which was kind of creative. And then they ripped their shirts off, or maybe their shirts weren't already on. I'm trying to remember. And it said greed across their body. They blamed the players. And I think that's what most people did. Most people blame the players. Did that matter? Because the owners may have won the PR battle, did that matter? When ballparks weren't filled in 95 and baseball's dealt with a popularity gap, did it matter who was wrong? It doesn't matter. So, look, for the sake of all of us who are kind of arguing about it or talking about it or breaking it down, we're all naturally going to pick sides. But it doesn't matter if your side's right or wrong if they blow the whole thing up. I do feel good, though, that they're going to figure something out. I'm telling you, I go back and forth about it. And I think the fact that the owners may try that of, hey, you know what? We can't make a deal. Here's 50 games. I do think the players may not be happy about it, but if I had to guess, I think they would end up playing.
And then, yeah, we'll all debate the merits of the season. We'll all, and that'll be a debate for years, probably. 50 games. How many teams should make the playoffs? Is this real? How do we feel about it? But you know what? They have us in a position. Most of us, I can't speak for everybody. I never can. But I think most of us are almost in the position of, all right, just give me 50 games then. That's fine. It's better than nothing. It's the way I feel about the DH. I've been so anti-DH in the National League. And, you know, if you've listened the last few weeks, I've said, fine, bring the DH in for the year. Whatever you want to do. just get us baseball. But that's the latest on that. And it's interesting because there's a big difference between counteroffer and we think we could use this as our backup plan if we can't make a deal. I mentioned Herm Edwards is going to join me at 2:40. Sal Licata will stop by again. We'll go through the worst Met losses of the last 25 years. And I'm very excited because later in the show, if you recall last week, Joe and I were kind of waxing poetic about how the Yankees have done this ridiculously good job of replacing legends. That Derek Jeter retires and Didi Gregorius had a pretty good run. Don Mattingly retires. They make a deal for Tino Martinez. He has a pretty good run. Even the closer situation, even though it isn't one guy, whether it was Soriano for 1 year, David Robertson, now Chapman, they've done a very good job of replacing Mariano. Not that those guys are as good as Mariano, but they've done a very good job of replacing a legend. And Ernie and I were talking about another area that they've done it, and that is for Bob Shepard. Because now when you go to Yankee Stadium, you hear a voice, and that voice has become the voice of Yankee Stadium. And I don't think he's missed a game. I think he's literally done every game at the new Yankee Stadium. He is a longtime play-by-play announcer. He's broadcasted for the Jets, did some for the Nets, but now he is the voice of Yankee Stadium. And when you talk about replacing a legend, he essentially replaced Bob Shepard, who was the voice of baseball for a billion years. And that is Paul Olden, who will join us at 5 o'clock. I look very forward to talking to him because that's not an easy job either. So a lot to do. We'll get to your phone calls, 877-337-6666. We are here twofold. To voice how you feel in this incredibly weird time, and also to be a distraction. It's basically up to you. 877-337-6666. Joe's on vacation. Evan Roberts here until 6 o'clock.